Hello everybody and welcome back to Mind Clickers. I'm a sport and exercise scientist and performance coach for the Renegades from Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for esports performance, counselling, science, and how we can holistically improve our athletes' quality of life. I am also a scientific author for G-Science, helping to provide and share educational content catered towards esports health and performance. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite level gaming. This includes getting an insight from professional players, coaches, shoutcasters, organization owners, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I chat with Kaplan, who is the current head coach for the Ghost Gaming Valorant team and previous IGL player for the Space Station Gaming Valorant team as well. I really enjoyed my chat with Kaplan as we explored individual roles within Valorant and the links between external personalities and whether a duelist is more aggressive or whether someone playing control is a little bit more laid back. And it was really interesting to hear different understandings and different conceptualizations of this idea. We also had a look at coaching styles and the differences between traditional sports coaching and esports in regards to creating a bond with players and building rapport so you essentially are the sixth man on the team. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 16 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm joined here today with Kaplan, who is the current head coach for Ghost Gaming Valorant Team and previous IGL for Space Station Gaming. How are you going today, mate?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. Woke up. It's a bit cold here in Melbourne, but how's it over there where you are?
Not so cold. Hot for Seattle, but that's usually pretty mild. And yeah.
Yeah, awesome. I really appreciate you jumping on today, and I'm really looking forward to digging deep into some, you know, psychology of Valorant and to share some experiences that I'm sure you've had and that I've had within the scene as well.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Always awesome. Love talking about Valorant, so.
Yeah, for sure. I guess we'll do it like we always do here on Mind Clickers, is just a bit of an introduction about yourself, you know, your background in esports and you know, your time as a player and coach, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm 26. I live in Seattle. I've been into esports, you know, since I figured out what they were when I was like 11, playing Counter-Strike Source. I've played games off and on competitively since then. Played a lot of CS:GO in the ECA leagues, and then with Valorant coming out, I decided I'm just going to try to make it in this. And I built a team and IGL'd it, and we ended up getting signed to Space Station Gaming. Mm-hmm. I played on that team for like 4 or 5 months. And then, yeah, I've been coaching the Ghost Gaming Valorant team since middle of January, so about 4 months now, and enjoying that. And I also have a degree in psychology from University of Washington, so that's kind of the other part of my background that feeds into my career currently.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm not too, I guess, in depth with the scene over there, but how is the psychology scene over there? And is there much kind of translation into esports as in regards to, I guess, specific degrees that can enable you to get into an esports pathway?
Yeah, no, I think there's very few. I don't actually know off the top of my head what there is in North America. I don't really. My guess is there's no bachelor's degree in esports psychology. Yeah. There are like master's programs in sports psychology here. Mm-hmm. So after a 4-year degree, you can go to like a, you know, any type of program for that. Right. But I don't think there's any that are actively focused on esports right now. There's some colleges here that are universities that are really trying to dive deep into esports, but I don't think they've kind of added the psychology curriculum.
Yeah. I think most people within that scene are really coming from that traditional sports background and I guess taking techniques that can apply to the esports scene. But I guess it'll be very interesting to see within the next 5 years or so, you know, whether we start to see an adoption of a catered esports program and what that'll look like.
Yeah, I hope so. I think so. There's definitely universities in Europe doing it, and I just want to see research. I'm too lazy. And I mean, it's just not my thing, research. It takes a ton of patience, but I would love to see some, you know, psychology research specifically focused on esports. That would be nice. And there's definitely esports programs popping up, just not in the psychology section yet.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's definitely going to be an interesting approach. I was about to go into an honors program here in Melbourne, Australia. And that was more so catered towards, you know, looking at the physiological variables of, you know, guys at, you know, lands and stuff. So that was also looking at your heart rate, your breathing and that kind of stuff, which would have been interesting, but I went down a different route, but, you know, no regrets as of such. But, but you mentioned you previously used to play CS. You know, did you ever think to yourself that, I guess, you know, having that previous experience in CS, similar to like myself, you know, you'd ever make that transition into a game like Valorant?
Yeah, so I kind of knew while I was in college, I was like, what do I want to do? And I kind of wanted to get back into esports, and I was really enjoying some master's level sports psychology courses I was taking while getting my undergrad in just normal psychology. And I thought, okay, like this would be a really fun kind of way to merge my education and like get a career and end up back in esports.
Yeah.
And I was playing some CS for fun after college, kind of planning, trying to figure out what my next move was. Mm-hmm. I saw Valorant get announced. Actually, my brother, he goes by Shake in the esports community. He was a professional Overwatch League coach. He now coaches collegiate Overwatch. He came up as a pro player in Overwatch and went into coaching. Wow. So I had a lot of respect for how straightforward of a path that is. And like, I think it's a really good path into coaching, right? You have the experience of being a player.
Yeah.
So when I saw Valorant get announced, I mean, I wanted to play pro, but I also knew, I was like, okay, well, if I can make it as a pro for any amount of time, it's a really, I already knew I wanted to end up coaching.
Yeah.
So when I saw Valorant get announced, I was like, you know, when you hop on board a game, right, when it comes out, you're just, it's way easier to make it than trying to break through the, you know, the two decade old North American Counter-Strike scene.
Yeah.
So yeah, the second, I think it announces Project A like mid-October 2019. And this, yeah, the day it got announced, I was like, all right, that's my into esports. Here we go.
And just
waited for more news on a beta and everything. So, yeah.
So I guess when you had that kind of direct mindset that you were going to approach it as a player, was there a lot of, I guess, things that you could take from the CS scene that you could adopt into your Valorant gameplay?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely the most similar game and to Valorant, it would be CSGO. And I'm very glad that I happened to be playing on like ESEA main teams before Valorant came out. I think it, you know, let me be at a starting point when Valorant came out that was good enough to have made it. I think if I hadn't played CS for a year prior, I'd played it before, but I actively played it a year before Valorant came out. Had I not done that, I don't think I would have been able to make it. There's just so much working on a team, the way the strategy works, the individual decision-making, the mechanics, the movement and gunplay and crosshair placement, just decision-making on all levels is, I mean, it's a very different game, but when you start comparing, Counter-Strike is more similar than anything.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, going throughout that route of, you know, as you mentioned just previously, the Bachelor of Psychology route, is there a lot of domains and aspects you can take that, you know, in regards to just brief psychology that can be applied to esports over something like sports psychology?
You mean just like applying general psychology principles?
Yeah, like what are the big differences, do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of traditional sports psychology degrees, from my understanding, yours is probably better. You know, I don't have much of a traditional education very specifically in sports psychology, but a lot of it is focused on, I think, the, you know, there's a big physiological part of competing and there's a huge part of the physical training that goes into sport. Right. And esport is so different. For me, I'm like a lot of people in esports. I grew up playing games way too much as a teenager. I didn't have the healthiest life thanks to gaming. And I figured out my own ways to be happier as I got into my late teens. Oh, hold on. Exercising makes me feel pretty good. Getting outside, getting away from screens makes me feel pretty good, you know, or, oh, I get some anxiety from playing games a lot. It maybe meditating or something helps with that. I had a lot of personal experience with the struggles, psychological struggles that come with playing esport and games a lot. Getting a general degree in psychology, you get just a really nice core understanding and background to how the human mind works.
Yeah.
And for me, there was a lot of personal connection being made in my 4 years of school of like, oh, okay, this is really fun. I'm really enjoying what I'm reading about and I can really draw on it and explain some of what I went through. And then, you know, once you kind of get your, I make my own foundation with that, right? And then I start as a coach, I can relate to some of the struggles players deal with and have some more confidence in my own ideas of what can help them because of what I've learned. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. I love that passion here. You're able to connect that more so brief general idea of psychology and how the brain works, how the, you know, the mind works as a whole, and then directly correlate that to into the esports scene. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
In regards to, I guess, when you were studying your psychology degree, were you also, was that the time period you were also playing as a Valorant player as well?
No. So I graduated, let's see, I think I graduated June 2019. I don't know why I can't. Okay. It's been a long time ago. So I had a year. June 2019. So I played Counter-Strike and just worked part-time jobs around Seattle for about a year before Valorant came out, close to a year.
Yeah, gotcha. Because I was just thinking it'd be really interesting looking at, I guess, someone who's competing at the professional level but also studying something like psychology or sports psychology, because they themselves would be able to directly use their own things that they're learning upon their own gameplay.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's way harder than I wish it was. I think maybe I would have some more success if I could actually... Listening to your own advice is just such a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Actively applying and staying aware of your own advice while you're the one also trying to do the activity is really, really hard. And I obviously, going to school and competing at the same time. There are currently pro players that are extremely good doing it. Props to them. I wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, for sure.
I assume my schooling would probably be the first thing I'd give up and it would suffer. But I'm relieved that I wasn't in school when Valorant came out. It was a really good time for me.
Yeah, for sure. And what do you think, I guess, about those who are trying to juggle that kind of study and professional gameplay balance? Is it, because I know over in Australia, I used to coach an individual who used to try and balance a double degree whilst also being a professional CS player.
Oh, man.
And he just couldn't really, you know, he just really couldn't adopt to it. So he actually had to drop his CS, and that was the most thing he was most passionate about. So, you know, do you tend to see it over there in North America, or how's that kind of scene look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a lot of it depends on the type of person you are. I think I think esports has to get, and that's a whole other topic, but, you know, hopefully we'll get more healthy and step away from unhealthy levels of grind culture. But at the same time, it's a directly competitive activity that you can grind for an enormous amount of time a day. It takes a ton. I think, you know, a lot of the people that end up succeeding are not the average Joe in terms of what they need from their daily life. You know, to make it in esports, you can't love, I think sometimes you can, but it's hard to love maybe a physical sport that you play and multiple different friendships and spend a lot of time with your family and a relationship. You can only have a couple extra things outside of esports. I think school can be one of those things, but I think for most people who are really trying to make it, if they're going into schooling, they ought to be the type of person who doesn't need a ton else going on outside of that, right? I mean, yeah, you can do school in Valorant, but you can't do school, Valorant, club sports, and have three friendships and a relationship, right? And work. Yeah. So it depends. But it's also interesting because I think doing only games, committing to only games is really hard. Like having nothing in your own life that forcibly gives you structure to your days, it's hard to be mentally healthy and do that if you're young and not the type of person to give yourself good, you know, it's hard to follow only your own structure. It's nice to have something you have to go get up for and go do. A lot of people trying to make an esports who aren't on a pro team yet, they don't have anything forcing them to go do anything. I think part-time school or part-time work is something I've actually really enjoyed at points that I've played in esports, because it's like enough of a structure that I feel healthy. Okay, I got to go out and do this thing a couple times a week, but I still have all the time I need to put into esports. Once you're doing full time, and even then, it depends on the degree, right? I mean, to be frank, I think most American bachelor's in psychology is not the hardest programs, but if you're going for pre-med or engineering, right, that's a whole nother, you know, probably twice the amount of studying a student for that has to put in.
And then I guess on top of that, you have, I guess, the psychological stress of, you know, doing assignments, doing exams, doing classes on time. And sometimes you might have a big full day, for example, you know, nine to whatever in the afternoon, 9 to 4, just a pure study and classes, and then have to jump on of a night time to attend 5-6 hours of scrims. So it's definitely a difficult balance that I imagine.
Yeah, no, I think it helps to understand your own level of talent too. I think if you can try to make it and identify, okay, I have enough talent that I'm kind of gunning for playing on a professional level while in school, then once it's time to join a pro team, you're probably not going to have the time for school. So you can gauge your potential and I think it's for older folks more than an 18-year-old, but for somebody who's 22, 23 and really thinking, am I ready to invest more of my life into esports? I think you can gauge your talent level and see if it's good enough that it's worth it. while doing something like scorework, and then go, okay, I am doing good enough. I'm placing well enough in these tournaments, or I'm doing, you know, I'm top 50 Radiant. I'm going to drop out and fully commit. And then, you know, once you're ready to be on a pro team, you need to put more time in. But I think you can put feelers out for your own skill level while having something going on in your life. I just think it's, well, once it's time to join a professional team and put in that much structured hours a day, you know, and week, it gets really tricky.
Definitely. It's like, I couldn't even imagine being able to double balance that, because I guess it is that kind of pressure of not wanting to let your teammates down as well. You want to make sure you're being there for them, and I guess, you know, attending scrims on time and bring the same amount of energy to a scrim as well, because, you know, it's definitely a different context in where, you know, one player's not really feeling it, and that kind of, you know, brings the whole team morale down a little bit lower.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
For sure. So I guess, you know, you briefly mentioned before as well that kind of grind culture. And do you think that, I guess, in regards to esports, there's so much emphasis on being on the grind? Because I guess we look to traditional sports and, you know, some of these guys are only playing or practicing for, you know, 2-3 hours. You know, 4 hours is pretty much the extreme for those guys. But of course, you obviously have to apply the physical outlet of that as well. But, you know, when we look to esports, it's not uncommon for players to play for 12, 10, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 hours a day. So do you think that, you know, there's something that needs to change, or, you know, how would we even go about changing that?
Yeah, no, I do think it's got to change. I think the grind culture, I think inevitably people are going to have to grind and put time in esports that most people would look at and think this is unhealthy for depending what your goal is in life. You know, I think sitting in a computer this much time out of a day and week and year, not by most people's standards, I don't think it would be considered healthy, but it's also not a normal career where, you know, it's extremely competitive. And people are really hungry to succeed, and there's only so many spots for so many pro teams, and that's just the way it is. I think it's going to be grindy and not ideal by a lot of standards or perspectives, but I still think it pushes too far in that direction. I think there is a pretty deep history in esports of gaming addiction leading players into putting the time in and becoming skilled enough to make it pro, using it as kind of, you know, just spamming ranked games, and games are addicting, and that's how, you know, these audiences grow in some points. And I think I think the esports, sorry, this is a tough question to answer. Esports will always be very grindy. I think it'll always be not ideal in some ways, but I think that being efficient and deliberate with practice sometimes means putting less hours in than a lot of teams and players are currently putting in. And I think people dismiss thinking about that a little too much. And as for a solution, I mean, talking about it, spreading awareness, but I also hope, you know, applying that as a coach to a team and achieving success by maybe even toning the grinding notch down to a healthy and efficient level where you're not just burning out. I hope that, you know, if the results speak for themselves, hopefully more teams and more organizations adopt a heightened awareness of this issue.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, do you think that comes down to a matter of, I guess, periodization of training? Because, you know, periodization of training is a massive thing with the traditional sports in regards to, you know, specifically working on a few things and not really taking any big blocks. So you think that, I had a previous chat with a couple of sports psychs about it, and the idea of periodization within esports, it seems really good because you're able to, I guess, hyper-focus on one area and, you know, more simultaneously tick the boxes for others. But how do we apply something like that, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a really important thing. I think it's something I push for during the team hours, the team scrims per day, right? It's a set amount of time where we get everybody online and we work on things as a team. I think having small goals makes it feel more manageable. It makes recognizing success easier. And most importantly, I think it makes, you know, having few simple and small goals makes actually having deliberate practice where we're actively working on something feasible. Mm. Whereas when you're just playing to play or you have 20 goals, you're not really going to end up focusing on any of them. And for me, that's where dosing the amount of play as a team in the right amount and not burning out, not playing too much becomes really important, because you can give yourself small goals, but if you just play tons of Valorant as a team every day, I don't think you're actually going to, it takes a certain type of energy and wakefulness to really actively focus and consciously stay aware that there's certain goals to the scrim. Okay, I'm playing this split map against this team because we need to work on this part of our game plan. That's a hard, the more and more you play that, I think it's a lot harder to hold on to that while you're in the game. So I think that setting those goals out, plain and simple, as a team, we do it every day. I put out these are the daily goals, kind of these are what I want us to focus on. Sometimes they're map specific, sometimes they're very general, and not playing too much as a team, like to make sure we stay focusing on those things. It's really important. But I also think there's something to be said about playing to play. I think there's a ton of really unique situations that can happen in Valorant. There's so many different things that you can, scenarios you can end up in. And sometimes you just do need like reps to end up in a lot of these situations. So you feel familiar in a lot of different ones. And I think that's where inevitably, I do think it's good for these players to play more ranked than I would like to have to recommend to somebody per week. But I understand the benefit is in a game like Valorant, there's just so many different things going on that just getting tons of reps in is the only way you're going to end up seeing certain situations and have them look familiar when you're in a match and it's, you know, match point or something.
For sure. It's very interesting you bring up that kind of idea of reps and different situations, because I previously had a chat with a League of Legends coach, and we had a chat about, you know, obviously in League of Legends, there's not many situations where you can really extract one thing, like you can go into a 1v1 and test out having full items and whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to think, because, you know, CS has something similar in regards to, you know, retakes, where you can practice retaking a site. You can specifically break down different individual factors of your gameplay that you want to work on, different goals. So, you know, why doesn't Valorant have that in regards to, I guess, specific retakes and being able to plan and kind of schedule that, do you reckon?
I just think there's way too many variables in this game. There's so much, the range of abilities that are still available and around, the circumstances which alter online and aren't online, what comp the other team's running, what type of player is playing behind those agents, and what's their style and form of decision making. It's going to get wild once the agent pool is twice as big. There's not only going to be, you know, 10 more agents to learn, but there's an exponential amount of synergies to learn, right, as agent pool grows. It's just too hard to control for these things. You can practice something set, and I think it's good to have set play in as part of your Valorant game, but your set play only fits certain situations, and the range of possible situations is just way too wide in this game.
Yeah.
And that creates a problem, right? Because I would love to just prep, practice certain situations as a team. Maybe you could even get a B team to kind of recreate certain scenarios, but it just doesn't end up being efficient in a game like Valorant where the range of possibilities is so wide. I think it's something I envy a little bit about Counter-Strike. I think you can get away with, I think there's an argument that the efficient amount of time for a player and team to put into practice per week in Counter-Strike is a smaller number than Valorant, because I do think there's a lot of gains, health benefits. You end up being more focused and playing better by putting less time in. And in Counter-Strike, I think there's just not quite as many variables. With Valorant, it starts to err more to the side for me of, I would love for you to only play this amount of hours per week, but there's just too much happening with this game, so we have to play this amount.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, the amount of variables, and I guess that comes down to, you know, the different individual champions' abilities and that kind of synergy that you talked about. We have a couple of listeners that I definitely know aren't really too familiar with the Valorant scene, for example, but are familiar with the CS scene. So in regards to synergy, in regards to, I guess, looking at different champion individual character roles, I guess, you know, on a 5-man team, what would you be looking for in regards to, you know, one entry frag or one lurk or one duelist? You know, what's kind of synergy that do you think is important to build?
Kind of like, what's the perfect sort of composition of type of players, basically? I mean, it's interesting. I definitely think it gets really muddy and complicated in Valorant, and I don't know if there's a right answer yet, but I think you do want an in-game leader, whether they're very rigid and micro-heavy or whether they're somebody that could kind of just herd the cats and give some direction.
Yeah.
But you do need, I think, a central voice is pretty necessary still. I think not having a clear central voice is really hard. So I think having somebody who's a central voice, I think definitely having at least one player who's very confident, can play make, can be aggressive, and really likes doing that. I think it's pretty much a safe bet that you're always going to have at least one agent in a composition that plays like that. And I think between that, you just need people that are flexible more than any certain type of player. You need people that can be aggressive, but can also be really thoughtful about the game strategy, really, really aware of teammates and really supportive and sometimes self-sacrificing in their play. Mm-hmm. I think Valorant so far rewards flexibility more than specialization, just because the game's meta has shifted a lot in 1 year. Mm-hmm. So I think for people listening who maybe aren't versed with the game, Counter-Strike doesn't have any moving pieces in terms of the balance and patches and agents, really. So you can kind of just have certain types of players that have certain jobs. And obviously in League of Legends or something, there's tons of different champions. But I think the developers do a pretty decent job saying these champions are in these roles. They follow similar design philosophies. There's literal lanes they play in on the map. Valorant is, you know, a giant abstract painting compared to that, right? It's one of those paintings where you just throw the paint all over the canvas. That's kind of where it is. So flexibility, having flexible players who really understand the game, it's pretty much the catch.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to exactly what you said just before. There's so many variables that you just, in some situations, you just can't control. And when you start to look at every single variable, that's when you start to overwork yourself and start to maybe, offset that balance that you're trying to look for.
Yeah, 100%. I think with what we're talking about having to put in a lot of reps because of all the different situations, I think flexible and adaptive, people who can not only adapt to playing a different agent, but adapt to understanding a lot of different agents and situations. You know, people who can really think on the fly and see new situations, but still apply the correct decisions to them. Mm-hmm. It's just worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, for sure. And how familiar is it, for example, one player to main two or three different champions? Because then obviously if they're doing that, that creates a lot more different synergy within the team. And I guess there's, a lot more possibilities.
Yeah, I think it's, I think everybody, myself included, is starting to realize how extremely valuable and important it is. Another reason you need to put some time into Valorant outside of team stuff is having a wide agent pool is really, really useful. I think having an agent pool that spans across different play styles and roles, because clearly the meta starts to shift to reward certain dynamics that your team might not be used to. It does enable you, the wider your agent pools are, the easier it is to play musical chairs, because somebody might not fit with a certain agent that technically falls within their role, but they like and fit with other agents that maybe are a little bit different than the style they've had in the team in the last couple of weeks. And if somebody else can kind of complement that, it's sort of like puzzle pieces, it can click right. You can try a lot of different compositions, so you can be really quick about trying them. It's really efficient because you don't have to worry about tons of dealing with the catch up there. And I think it enables you to throw curveball strategies at other teams, right? Because you can just try different stuff between every tournament, especially when balance patches hit, when new agents come out. You got to be able to move stuff around pretty quick in order to be ready for a tournament.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess that's where it kind of splits itself from something like CSGO, where, there's not much individuality between players in regards to, the five man. It's pretty much the exact same. And the only difference is what guns you buy, right? But in terms of Valorant, each character is pretty much different in regards to the abilities and that kind of diverse range that that kind of synergy that they can build. And that kind of, obviously adds to more situations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think there's a little more self-expression in the mechanics and gunplay of Counter-Strike. You can kind of look at somebody and know easier what player it is that you're watching if you know the certain team and the certain players pretty well. So you lose a little bit of that with Valorant, but I still think there's plenty of it, and combine that with the agents and it starts to get pretty dynamic.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned just briefly before, I guess in regards to, the IGL, the in-game leader, the one who's, I guess, there to set the blocks for, communication and to kind of diversify all that kind of, game plan, for example, and strategy. Very, very similar to when I had Shinobi on, that kind of, mindset that he had as well. And I believe you had a chat with him, which is awesome to hear as well. I guess when we look at individual roles, for example, an entry fragger, do you think there's a tendency to see that person's a little bit more aggressive in their play and aggressive in the way they hold themselves? I don't know how to frame that kind of question.
Yeah, I think I see what you're saying. Is there a crossover between the play style they need to have in the game and kind of like their character, personality in general?
Their mental approach towards the game, yeah.
I think sometimes it proves to be true. Sometimes it becomes surprising. I think where that's definitely true is confidence. I think some of the duelist roles, a lot of the duelists in Valorant require a lot of confidence and on-the-fly thinking. You have to make a decision basically before you even consciously think about it sometimes with these agents. And they're very aggressive decisions that take fights, make big plays. you have to have confidence in yourself that you're willing to be impulsive, basically just do things as your mind thinks of them instead of checking them. You know, you can't, it's, you can't really think before you act sometimes. I think that takes a lot of self-confidence. And I do believe that self-confidence usually is a character trait that translates on, you know, into the game and out of the game. And I think being somebody who hesitates, questions yourself, is inconfident.
Right.
Not a very good characteristic, something you'd want to work on in general that I think probably affects all players, but especially in Valorant. Yeah. There's definitely like a duelist role. You really can't have that trait. Whereas maybe if you're a more supportive agent, you could lack a little bit of confidence in your play, but you can make up for it in confidence in your decision-making. You can think, well, I don't feel like I'm the better player every time I take an aim duel, but I can, I'm on Sova and I can create favorable situations where I know logically the way the game's playing out, the situation I'm in, whatever the angles favors me, and it makes me feel better and more confident, right? Like you're kind of controlling the situation to give you the confidence. Whereas there's definitely agents where you need to just feel pretty powerful and just kind of make things happen on the screen. I think something like Jett, I definitely think there's a carryover there.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's definitely interesting looking at, as you said, that kind of, you know, self-confidence and self-efficacy towards, you know, individual tasks and traits. And I guess it's very different from CS in that regard, because in regards to CS, everyone, you know, pretty much knows their role and knows the overall structure of the team. But in regards to Valorant, you have such a different dynamic in regards to abilities and different rotations and different plays that can be made, whether it be on attack or defense. And it just comes out to see that, you know, it's a very interesting topic.
I think I've thought so much about how does personality end up applying the game and the roles people are in the way they play. And I think confidence is a huge one. I think somebody's sort of dominance or passiveness in the way they approach situations ends up being true too, right? Some people are naturally more passive. They go with the flow. There are definitely certain agents, roles on a team, even out of game, that lend itself to that. Whereas others, you really have to be, I have an idea, I have the solution here. Much more aggressive, not necessarily aggressive, but pretty dominant or self-confident in taking control. That shows up a lot, I think. And maybe if, you know, talkativeness, if somebody's extremely quiet, you don't want them playing a certain agent like Astro where you have to constantly be talking. But outside of that, I've been surprised and humbled by, you know, I've had really aggressive players on a team who end up being really kind of the timid or quiet person when you're out to dinner at LAN, or somebody who just won't shut up ends up being a more supportive player. So I think it ends up varying, but
that's very interesting. And I guess as a coach, do you see that directly when you coach some of your players in regards to, you know, one player is talkative a lot more based on their role, or is it more so just that, you know, that kind of synergy within the team external of the role?
Yeah, no, it definitely shows up as really important. And I think it feeds back into my comment that people need a wide agent pool. For example, you have the smokes role in Valorant. It's kind of a community coined term, but the role that ends up, you know, the agent role is controller by Riot. Omen was the premier controller in the smokes role, right? Your job is kind of smoke around the map. Omen can be played very aggressively, but he can also be quite the lurker, and he's pretty simple in his play style. We had one player who was an outstanding Omen, but was a pretty quiet player, just a quiet person and a little bit more passive with ideas. And I think the meta shifts. Now you need this Astra character to be your smoker. That player didn't fit Astra, but they fit Omen to a T. Now our current Astra player is Ryan. He's an extremely, extremely talkative player. I mean, he's just energetic, talk. And it just fits that agent so well. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I think that's an interesting part of the game that feeds back into needing to be flexible. Is the agent that ends up switching for another agent, depending on the patch and meta, doesn't always fit the same player, but based on how they are, what their character is in the server.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely very interesting. And I think it's even more interesting when you look at it on a wide scale approach, and you look at towards different regions, for example, you know, got NA and EU and the different kind of player personalities that you talked about in regards to their role selections. And then you can even look to, you know, something like South Korea, where they have a very, I guess, direct and sometimes even aggressive play style in regards to some of the games they play, like StarCraft, for example. You know, those kind of different individual personalities that can cater towards performing a specific role. It's definitely interesting. And, you know, whether it's a research topic that we can look at in regards to, you know, someone's personality and underlying individual traits and even motivations towards the game and how that kind of turns out and is an outlier of their performance in game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If this was more, I would love to read, you know, anyone's any attempt at researching this stuff, which I think is quite doable. And if you could quantify these things when you trialed players, I mean, it would just be, if I had a magic whatever, some you know, some apparatus that could tell me these things and how they translate to the game, that would be amazing. For now, I ride with my intuition and attempt a lot of attention to detail during trials and getting to know a player. I try to interview them, but it's hard. It's hard to predict this stuff. It's kind of hard to know what kind of player somebody ends up being in the server.
Definitely. And do you think that, you know, it doesn't really directly correlate, but we could look to something like Overwatch, where it's obviously very infamous within the scene, and, you know, that kind of, you know, in regards to that kind of ability-driven game, we could look to something like that in regards to individual characters and their kind of play style. But then again, it's not really the same sort of, you know, bomb situation.
Yeah. It would be fun to do like a big, if you tested, like maybe take not a pro level, but just active competitive league players in a certain region and controlled for all these variables and then kind of gave them personality tests and then checked which roles or champions they leaned toward. It would be really fun to see if there's any pattern.
Yeah.
I think it gets much more complicated with a game like Valorant and on a pro level, right? It's just so, there's so much going on. There's so much stuff to consider, but
it's crazy.
Yeah.
One thing I also wanted to have a chat with you about is, I guess, coaching and I guess this kind of sense of coaching style. You know, so for example, in traditional sports, we have coaches who are very democratic, very authoritarian, even in their approach to coaching, whether that being very direct and, you know, being very informative in regards to the players have to do this, they have to do that this way because that's the way that's previously worked, you know, effectively and efficiently, or more so in regards to more of a democratic style where, you know, you can kind of test the waters and, you know, do your own sort of thing. So, you know, can we see that in regards to esports? Can we see that in regards to, you know, Valorant, for example?
Yeah, I definitely think there's definitely a different style generally compared to certain sports, but I think there's a range in style too. I think a lot of North American sport coaching philosophy comes from American football.
Yeah.
First of all, these are just different people from different walks of life playing these sports. There's way different culture that they've grown up in as kids, played through these sports in. I mean, the culture, the type of people they end up being because of the culture and environment they grew up in is so different. Mm-hmm. And you're also a coach of 50 plus players. It's like you got it. You're really, it's a different job. You got to be a different type of person. I think it ends up being pretty authoritarian or pretty dominant. Mm-hmm. And you would need to do that. You couldn't mediate and be a very democratic coach for 53 players that are pretty alpha male relative to the general population a lot of the time. I think esports gets really interesting because it's five players on one team right, that I'm coaching, and I try to read about these coaching philosophies, but it's hard because it ends up feeling not like they're wrong or anything, but it starts to feel inefficient because of how much of this book I read can I apply to esports coaching? Even then, how much of it do I have to adjust for esports coaching? Because my situation and job is actually so different from this sports coach. Like, yes, we're both coaches, but it's just so different.
Yeah.
Not to say I'm, you know, I don't mean to seem arrogant. I would, if there were books on esports coaching from great esports coaches from 40 years ago, I would be reading them every day.
Yeah. But
it gets really difficult. And it's been a humbling experience for me to try to figure out how much of esports coaching is trying to kind of stay confident and intense and sometimes authoritative, mm-hmm. and other times, I think most of the time it's more mediating. It's getting to know the five players on a team, mediating conversations, creating a healthy democratic culture where everybody's a peer with opinions. And sometimes I think an important part of being a coach is that you're a staff, you're not a player, you're not an exact peer. Somebody's got to drop the hammer on a topic or a piece of criticism eventually. And I think it helps to be a coach. You can deliver criticism more effectively when you're not a peer. It's like a little bit of, okay, you're my boss. But I think that's not really the case a lot of the time on these Valorant teams. And I think it's not the most effective way to coach. But it, I guess, depends on the team too and the organization, the team culture. If you are a coach and you're building a team from scratch, you could probably be very authoritarian and getting the right players that mesh well and work well with that environment. You're also, if you're the one building the team and your organization heavily backs you, you have more leverage to behave that way. Mm-hmm. It's like this constant balance that's shifting and handling it in the right way. It's the hardest part of the job, in my opinion, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I guess there's no one there to tell you what's right or what's wrong, right? There's no one there to say you should be doing this kind of style, you should be doing that. And I guess that's where it's a lot more tricky because that's up to you and what you deem as most effective and efficient in regards to, I guess, how the players take it as well.
Yep, definitely. And I think I try to talk to tons of coaches I respect and get their advice so that at least somebody can give me some feedback on what they think's right or wrong in a situation. But I think you're right. You got to have a lot of trust in yourself and some intuition. Mm. I think it's pretty important. And it's the balance between going, okay, these are the type of players I have and the current team culture I have, and I'm going to fit that. And, you know, that's one side of it. What are the, you know, I think that influences how to handle a situation as a coach. What kind of players do I have? What kind of team do I have? Yep. But there's also, what kind of team do I think will be successful? What kind of team culture do I believe in and I fit personally? And sometimes do I want to try to leverage the role of coach to push for that or steer the team toward that team culture? That's a hard thing to balance.
Yeah.
I feel lucky that with my team, I've really love and trust the players. And I think we've been lucky to be so similar and kind of had a team culture naturally come about. And I really like that we've gotten to do that and it's gone successfully because it makes it easier to be intuitive with these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely think that when you can build that synergy and rapport with your players to a level where it feels like you're almost the sixth player, it kind of really builds that kind of bond and allows you to connect a lot more easier and allows you to kind of communicate different ideas and styles and matchups and metas and allows you to get on everyone's kind of same wavelength a lot easier as if regards to you didn't have that kind of value and respect within the team.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I have my vision of how to play Valorant in a perfect world and what comp to run. And as in-game leader, I think on Space Station, I could push it pretty hard, but as a coach, if I push it pretty hard, sometimes, you know, really hard, if this is how it should get played and this is the exact comp we should run, it doesn't really go well. And I don't think that's unlucky that my team maybe doesn't see things the exact same way. I just think as a coach, just trying to aggressively be like, this is the way the game is played, this is the comps, this is exactly what we're going to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't end up working. And I think this game, specifically Valorant, really rewards people having tons of collaboration and creativity and confidence in their play as a team. Lots of talking and ideas. It's a really level playing field with everybody needing to work together and come up with stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it really ends up lending a coaching style that is more about mediating, facilitating, maybe a little push or nudge in a certain direction or a little bit of authoritative action to keep stuff in line. But what you're saying, being that sixth player, I think it's just so valuable in Valorant, because it's a game with a lot of creativity, a lot of options. And it's also a shooter where when you're comfortable, you're confident and you end up playing the mechanics of the game better. So like a constant balancing act between all these things. I keep saying the word balance and it's impossible to find the right one, but
it's hard to find it. Definitely. So when you were on Space Station, did you have a coach yourself?
We had Ranger, who was our coach he came in, I think about 2 or 3 months into us being a team.
Right. Yeah. So then having him as a coach, and then you going into a coaching role after being a player, was there any kind of things you could draw from your experiences when you dealt with him?
Yeah, I think a big one is I was kind of an in-game leader and captain, learning how to work with a coach. So I try to be really aware of that when I'm a coach working with the players.
Right.
And he really helped us kind of figure out some things like the right way to approach like a schedule throughout a week, right. Kind of what's the nice pacing of when to review things, when to be practicing. Should we review only before? Should we review before and after practice, before and in the middle? I think he had a good intuition for that. And I think he struck a nice balance with trying to aid with strategy, but first and foremost, being a coach of the atmosphere, I try to kind of channel some similar approach.
You briefly mentioned like reviews there and stuff like that in regards to, I guess, watching back scrims and watching back matches. How important do you think that is, especially within esports, I guess, as a team, sit down and watch back games and, you know, pick out different bits and bobs that could have went wrong or could have been improved on?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think you got to look at, I think being able to look at situations as a team and talk about them, not just for their exact situation, but why is this the right decision in this situation? What are you thinking about? Okay, in this post plant, in this, you know, 2v3, it's right to push and take this fight because of the alts they have.
Yeah.
Not just, okay, so in that 2v3 on that side, I should peek when this guy's this alt. No, it's, you should be thinking yeah. about this variable in this type of situation because X, Y, and Z. Yeah. I really like looking at a review to pull that bigger picture understanding out and like mm-hmm. use it educationally, because I feel like that becomes really efficient in teaching players to adapt and make the right decisions in a lot of future situations that we right. won't be able to predict and expect. Like, I really like that big picture, fundamental, mm-hmm. sometimes abstract approach, because
yeah.
I just think it's going to pay off more in a game like this where there's, it's really hard to kind of, it just feels inefficient to get hung up on very specific situations.
For sure, definitely. And I guess when you have that more broader approach, a lot of different, I guess, situations can apply to it directly, whether it's yeah. if you hyper-focus on one specific thing, post-plant, he's sitting in, you know, this corner, peeking whatever yeah. angle, then that might not happen and it might be a different angle. So being able to incorporate that kind of overall mentality to look at everything from a wider perspective, and then whenever that situation happens, you can kind of go down whatever route seems most efficient.
Yeah, helps you play a lot more loose and adaptive, definitely, as a team. And I think if you look at, in my opinion, some of the best looking teams in the game, that clearly is the style of play they have.
For sure, definitely. And in regards to feedback's always been an interesting one to deliver to players individually. So, you know, when we're looking at, I guess, if someone can work on something better or if someone can do someone differently, do you approach it more so in regards to giving them individual feedback, or do you do it in more so a team setting? Because most commonly in traditional sports, it always depends on the individual as a mm-hmm. more than you are sure and how they deal with feedback. Some people love that feedback. And if someone says, you know, you should have done this, they're like, okay, I'm going to take that. I'm going to drive that. I'm going to eat that. I'm going to, you know, that's going to be my motivation. Whereas yeah. if you said that to someone who didn't have that high level of self-confidence, then they might take that a lot more personally and they might not be able to, you know, spur that same level of motivation.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I try to give individual goals right. at the start of days that are for everybody individually, but said in front of everybody. Gotcha. I think that builds a accountability that is really nice to have, where players can hold each other accountable for,
right.
You know, they're, so that you don't end up in a situation where you're telling somebody individually to work on something and they don't appreciate or care about what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And then they just don't do it. Right. Whereas if I say it in front of everybody and the others agree, it's an issue.
Yeah.
Then they're kind of also looking out for it. And there's pressure from peers in a healthy way. I think it's really important. For some players, I go into deep detail of their goal in front of everybody, because saying in front of everyone helps them take it more serious, or at the very least, they just don't mind.
Mm.
But yeah, for sure, there's definitely other people, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just all sorts of things. You're upbringing, your personality type, all these yep. things that make it so it's really hard to get really deep with mm-hmm. the goals and criticisms in front of everybody. During practice, for a separate reason, I usually only directly message people feedback. There's some exceptions, but generally I like to keep us really focused, forward thinking in practice. And I yep. find that talking past tense about mistakes during a scrim in Valorant is not effective because of how busy the game's freeze time is and how much you have to all be thinking and talking. So I've been trying to lean away from that lately and trying that out.
Yeah.
But even if I were saying feedback out loud to players, which I have done before, like always, you know, instead of slash whispering them in the game, there's definitely certain players I would more actively make a point to whisper or say aloud to, right? You have to kind of get to know your players and how they, what their confidence is, exactly like you said. And I think it's okay in a five player setting to explain that to players too, to say, hey, the reason you don't hear me give this guy feedback is because they handle it better when it's directly from me. And hey, I think it really helps when you hold this guy accountable and suggest to him to work on his goal. But this guy, I really don't think you need to remind him. He's already pretty stressed about it. And it's fine to be upfront with a player about how their teammate is as a person.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's like, that seems sometimes stigmatized, but I don't know why.
Yeah. And how do you think that some of those players take that kind of approach to keeping everyone accountable? Do they drive on that? Do they thrive on that? Or is it more so like, oh, it's another thing we got to do?
I don't think they worry too much about their, I don't think they think too much about their teammates' individual goals during play.
Right.
But I hope that me saying out loud and every player being aware that somebody's trying to work on something, you know, they can add to it. They can have a comment. Maybe it's something that they actually felt was an issue and I ended up delivering, so they can clarify it. Sometimes a player has a certain suggestion to help a different player work on something in like a way I wouldn't have thought of because I'm not playing daily right now. So I think it's good to say it out loud because it's in-game stuff and it applies to teammates. So they end up having like adjustments to what I'm trying to say or advice on how to work on it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's really good.
Another thing I wanted to just briefly mention and touch on was this, I guess, idea of, you know, external, you know, pressure and stress derived from, I guess, you know, something like a tournament setting. Where, you know, for example, I guess we'll take the example of going to LAN, for example. How do you deal with, I guess, if some players haven't been in that situation and they're not acclimatized to, I guess, dealing with stage lights, dealing with crowds, dealing with the pressure of performing, dealing with an unfamiliar environment?
That's a good question. that's a hard question. It's a really unique problem. You could do things like simulate that environment, but I think if we were going to LAN and I had players who had concerns or likelihood of being nervous on LAN and were worried about it, I think I would rather just kind of brute force building their confidence and their ability to kind of get in a flow state and focus on the game. I just trust that that's enough, that when there's distractions like a crowd or a camera, you know, getting a shot of you during freeze time, that you don't end up, that you're just kind of too deep in the game to be super phased by it. Rather than taking an approach of like talking a lot about this, you know, the crowd or the camera guy or visualizing it. You know, I'd rather just go for the ignorance is bliss, try to just kind of shift the focus away from it. I'm just guessing because this is way out of my wheelhouse. This is just like me winging it answer. I'd probably consult folks with a better performance psychology background and maybe some experience with this stuff and get their thoughts. But if I, in a world where I couldn't do that.
It's definitely a point to bring up, right? Because I mean, I guess you look at some organizations and some teams that have the resources to have a physiotherapist, have the resources to have a sleep psychologist, a sports psychologist on the team. And when you have so many different external allied health professionals in a team setting, it really can help to empower, you know, the team. And, you know, do you think that, I guess, when one team is going up against, you know, someone that just has a coach versus someone that has a full-fledged army of actual people helping them, is that unfair?
That's a good question. You know, I think the impact that those staff have isn't so obvious and direct and guaranteed that it's fair for me to say it's unfair. And I think clearly there's systems and team cultures that thrive without those things or even thrive because they don't have those things.
Yeah.
I'm not saying in a perfect utopia 20 years from now or 30 years from now with esports, that that would be optimal. I'd like to think that, you know, staff like yourself and I make a difference and that all teams should have them. But it's hard to say it's directly unfair, even just for the purpose that, I mean, I think Sentinels is the most likely team to win Iceland, and they don't have a coach, so they don't have any real staff there. I might be wrong. They might have staff I'm not aware of, but from my understanding. So it's hard to say.
It's definitely an interesting approach because I've had a chat with a couple of players, and I guess those involved, you know, I've had a chat with a CIP psychologist online because before, and it's definitely an interesting approach in regards to resources and regional resources, because you look to somewhere like, I guess, for example, here in OCE, you know, pretty much all of our top teams don't really have someone, you know, targeting those external domains and external performance factors of, you know, sleep, nutrition, exercise, you know, pre-game warm-ups, all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of just left up for the players to try and find their own way. So it's definitely interesting, you know, comparing that to somewhere like Europe, where they have big facilities that are catered towards, you know, getting the guys in the gym every morning, and people who are there really, you know, invested and targeted towards improving performance. It's definitely an interesting question. I guess I had, you know, previously when I had that chat, OCE is definitely a region that's never going to be on the same level as you guys over there. I think that's something we've just acknowledge and we understand now.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with how many people and how many teams are trying to make it at a certain level, and how many, you know, how wide is the range of teams who are really gunning for the top five spots, for example. I think, like, how many teams could be top five in the next year in North America? I think it's a pretty big number. I think the best team right now doesn't have a coach. I think Sentinels, I think they look amazing, but they're all really experienced players. I definitely think there's so many teams that would need some, would have such a hard time without any staff, without anyone kind of dealing with some of the auxiliary stuff outside of playing, helping with the atmosphere, keeping conversations level, making sure conversations happen. I think it gets really hard for a tier two scene to grow if they don't have that.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting dynamic. I guess just starting to turn off the gas and roll down the hill now is the saying that I use to say that the episode's, I guess, starting to come to the final sprint. Let's just run through a quick hypothetical. Say, for example, I know there are a lot of professional players listening, you know, within the Valorant scene and within the CS scene, and even some in the Overwatch scene as well. If you were to give some advice to some players, I guess from a coach or from a player perspective, either of which, that are, I guess, in that kind of tier three, tier two, looking to take it to the next level, looking to push into that tier one, and looking to, I guess, trial for a team or play with a team that's going to reach international standards, you know, what would you give them?
Yeah, I think get to know yourselves as a team. Really, first and foremost, whatever the environment is for you as a team, you know, make it fun, get along, be direct with each other, be open, talk about things, but make sure you're having a good time when you're playing, right? It shouldn't be miserable, and you're not going to survive as a team or play well in tournaments if you aren't enjoying each other's company. Like, honestly, you, like, have fun. Like, it will actually make you more likely to make it to pro. There's no reason it should feel miserable. And get to know, you know, build some confidence as a team while you do that. Get to know what your strengths are. What agents do you play well? What style of Valorant do you play that does well? And run with that. Don't get hung up on copying what the pros do. You're not that team. You're not going to make it with the same formula. I think kind of have a lot of confidence and have a good time as a team. It's going to give somebody the best shot to kind of break through to the next level.
Yeah, for sure. I guess, you know, that kind of direction of confidence and fun can really go a long way.
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. And I think just, you know, you're going to end up being loose and having really good strategy if it's you know, you're playing with a style that you're comfortable in and you're familiar with.
For sure. Definitely. Couldn't agree more. Well, I really appreciate jumping on today, Kaplan, and really going through definitely a different approach that I haven't been through on MindClicks before, which is, I guess, more so directly looking at that coaching mindset and all the variables and synergies and things that we can account for. within players' characteristics and within their own kind of personality. So it's definitely a talk that I value a lot, and it's definitely a couple of things that I'm sure a lot of listeners can draw out into, and even some things I can draw out into my coaching. And I really appreciate your insights and all the kind of, you know, the passion you brought to the stuff that you said.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. It was a ton of fun. I love talking about this stuff. It's really fun to talk with it about, you know, with another podcast host and with somebody as well versed in esports and performance psychology as yourself. It's been a ton of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Very passionate about the scene. And I guess, it's definitely really interesting to see where everything is going to go. For everyone listening, where can we find you on your socials, and where can we find your podcast as well?
Yeah, you can find me at twitter.com/itskaplan, ITSKAPLAN. And you can find me on youtube.com/itskaplan. I have a podcast called No Cap, where I interview pro players, coaches, stuff like that. It's on a bit of a hiatus because trying to find the right balance with doing it while being a professional coach, but it's coming back hopefully in the next week or two, and then it'll be every week. And so that's on my YouTube channel. It's also on Spotify and other podcast platforms under No Cap. And other than that, look out for Ghost Gaming Valorant, hopefully doing well in the summer VCT stage. Fingers crossed. I'm feeling good about it.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to, I guess, watch that team and then know that they've got a really good coach behind them.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Good players in front of me. Trust me, they're incredible.
I've got to say that I love the name of the podcast, No Cap. That's just
thanks.
Awesome.
Yeah, appreciate it. That's the best part about the podcast. So it's time to make it active again so that hopefully there's other...
Awesome. I really look forward to it. Well, I really appreciate all the time. And I'm sure that a lot of listeners can really get some things out of our conversation today. So again, thank you very much for coming on, and I appreciate everything.
Yeah. Thank you, Lachlan. Take it easy.
See ya.